Hello everyone, welcome to Journal Club with Happy. This podcast is structured as a short scientific journal club where I will discuss scientific papers. I try very hard to use everyday language to explain science. And since I'm also a science student in this journal club, we learn science together. This is the second part to a journal club that we started last week. My friend Stedman is here with me discussing an Alzheimer's disease paper. Hello, Stedman.
Hey, Happy. It's great to be here.
We are reading a paper by Pochsleitner and colleagues from the University of Tübingen, and the title of the paper is Western Diet Increases Brain Metabolism and Adaptive Immune Responses in a Mouse Model of Amyloidosis. I strongly recommend that you listen to part one from last week because we introduced the paper and set up the study design. This paper investigates the effect of the Western diet, which is high in both sugar and fat, on brain metabolism, neuroinflammation, and the immune response in the context of Alzheimer's disease. An Alzheimer model mouse, the APP-PS1, is used, and for comparison, a wild-type group of mice are used. That makes up the genetic variables in this study. In biology, we call this a genotype. The genotype of the control group is wild-type, and the genotype of the Alzheimer model mice is APP-PS1. The environmental variable in this study is the diet. Groups of both genotypes, which are the wild type and the APP-PS1, will be either on a normal diet or a Western diet to see how diet contributes to neurodegeneration. From the first part of this journal club, we learned that the mice on the Western diet gained a lot more weight. They also had higher lipid accumulation in their livers. We learned that their brains had higher glucose and fatty acid uptake. And the PET scans showed that the Alzheimer model mice, which are the APP-PS1 mice, had higher neuroinflammation compared to the wild-type mice. And diet had very little effect to this measurement of neuroinflammation in the brain. Today's journal club is the second half of that paper and focuses on how the Western diet affects the immune response in the Alzheimer model. One major shift from the first half of the paper is the techniques used for these experiments. All the techniques for today's journal club were ex vivo, which means that the samples were taken out of the experimental mice and processed to identify the immune cell components in the samples. For example, in figure 6, the method used to generate the data is flow cytometry. In that technique, the samples are dissociated to single cell level and then treated with fluorescent antibodies that can selectively bind proteins on the surface of the cells. And using a flow cytometer, the identity of those cells could be determined based on the fluorescence that they're emitting. And accordingly, in figure 6, panels A, B, C, and D, brain samples were processed to identify the immune cells that have infiltrated the brain. In panel A, we're looking at innate immune cells, also known as myeloid cells. Three types of myeloid cells were tested for their presence in the brain, and they are the macrophages, neutrophils, and dendritic cells. Out of the three innate immune cell populations that were tested, the neutrophils showed a strong diet effect. So the mice that were on the Western diet had lower numbers of neutrophils in the brain when compared to mice that were on the normal diet. And this happened regardless of the genotype of the mice. Both the wild type and the APP-PS1 mice that were on the Western diet had lower numbers of neutrophils in the brain. In addition to the innate immune cells, the research team also looked at adaptive immune cell types. In panels B, C, and D, we see T cell infiltration of the brain. These T cells are CD3 positive, and further discrimination shows us that they're cytotoxic T cells, so which means that they're activated and ready to attack any invading pathogens. Diet affected the level of these T cells in the mice. The Alzheimer model mice, which were on the Western diet, had the highest infiltration of cytotoxic T cells in their brain. Since I'm talking about the adaptive immune cells, I should also mention the B cells. The B cells are the other type of adaptive immune cells. However, unlike the T cells, genotype and diet did not affect the number of B cells in the brain of the mice. So from the results so far, we learned that the Western diet leads to higher infiltration of T cells into the brain. And that is one take-home point from figure 6. In addition to identifying the immune cell infiltration in the brain, the research team also looked at the immune cell populations and the adipose tissue, which is the fat tissue of the mice. For this experiment, fat samples were taken from the mice and processed to see the immune cells that were present. And again, flow cytometry was used to gather this data. And again, we look at both innate immune cells and adaptive immune cells. This time around, there were less differences in T cell populations. All four conditions, which are made up of the genotype and the diet variables, had similar and comparable to T cell populations. The big difference in adaptive immune cell populations was seen in B cells. In figure 6, panel H, we see that the fat tissue from the Western diet mice had a higher number of B cells when compared to that of the normal diet-fed mice. This effect is regardless of genotype. Both the wild type and the EpiPS1 mice that were on the Western diet had higher B cell composition in their adipose tissue. When it comes to the innate immune cells in the fat tissue, we can see that in figure 6, panel F, there was a strong diet effect on the number of macrophages, especially the M1 state of the macrophages, which is the pro-inflammatory state. The genotype of the mice contributed very little to the number of innate immune cells in the fat tissue. And regardless of the genotype of the mice, the Western diet-fed mice had higher inflammatory macrophages in their adipose tissue. As take-home point from figure 6, we learned that there is higher infiltration of T cells into the brain of the Alzheimer model mice that were on the Western diet. And there are diet-dependent differences in the immune cell composition of the fat tissue in these mice. The next question that the research team looked into is the specific location of these infiltrating T cells in the brain. We want to know if this T cell infiltration is targeted to amyloid plaques or if it's targeted to general parts of the brain that are affected by Alzheimer's disease. And in order to answer that question, the research team looked at brain slices from the mice. The brain slices had different regions of the brain, like the cortex, the thalamus, the hippocampus, the hypothalamus, and the choroid plexus. The brain slices were imaged to see the neurons, the microglia, the astrocytes, and the infiltrating T cells. And that is the data presented in figures 7 through 11. I'll go through figures 7 and 8, and Stedman will tell us about figures 9, 10, and 11. In figure 7, the research team imaged the cortex of the mice and compared the neurons and glia across the four conditions. In the cortex, we see higher numbers of amyloid plaques in the Alzheimer model mice, and this amyloid burden is accompanied by activated microglia and astrocytes. But interestingly, the group of Alzheimer model mice that were on the Western diet had a higher number of infiltrating T cells in the cortex. We already expect the amyloid burden and increase in activation of the microglia and astrocytes. But the interesting input from this paper is that these mice also had a higher number of infiltrating T cells in the cortex. We can see this in panel J. There's a diet effect to the amount of T cells in the cortex of the mice, and the highest number was measured in the APPPS1 mice that were on the Western diet. Moving on to figure 8. Figure 8 is very similar to figure 7. The only difference is the region of the brain that is evaluated in the slice. Instead of the cortex, which we saw in figure 7, now we're looking at the thalamus. And just as in figure 7, we see an amyloid burden in the thalamus of the Alzheimer model mice. And the amyloid burden is accompanied by more activated microglia and astrocytes. We see this in panels H and I. There's a strong genotype effect in amyloid deposition and glial activation. But there are also T cells in the thalamus. In panel J, although the variability in each group is very high, we can still see that the infiltrating T cells have the thalamus as one of their destination. The take-home point for figures 7 and 8 is that both the cortex and the thalamus are hosting infiltrating T cells. However, these T cells are not near the amyloid plaques. They are in the same brain region, but the T cells are not targeting the amyloid deposits. I'm bringing up this particular point because we still do not understand the role of infiltrating immune cells in the process of neurodegeneration. Now, Stedman will walk us through figures 9, 10, and 11.
Continuing on the same trajectory, we're going to look at figures 9, 10, and 11. If you're following along with the paper, these figures look almost identical to figures 7 and 8, although they investigate a different brain region, as Happy previously mentioned. Figure 9 is investigating the hippocampus. So when we compare the hippocampus to the previous two regions we discussed, which were the previous two regions that Happy discussed, which are the cortex and the thalamus, we see a relatively low plaque accumulation when comparing the hippocampus to the last two groups. When you move on to the microglia count, you see a relatively high microglia count in the transgenic mice. However, a low microglia count whenever you look at the wild-type mice that do not have this faux Alzheimer's. Moving on to the astrocyte count in the hippocampus, we see a large number of astrocytes in both the Western diet and the APPS1 transgenic mice. However, it seems as though there is a slight increase in number of astrocytes in the transgenic Western diet mice, although there is a lot of variability between and within groups, so it is not a massive difference, if any. And then finally, in the hippocampus, there seem to be a larger number of infiltrating T cells than, or excuse me, there seem to be a lot more infiltrating T cells in the hippocampus whenever the mice are both on a Western diet and are transgenic for APPS1. Moving on to figure 10 here, just like previously mentioned, we are looking at all of the same metrics within a different brain region called the hypothalamus. In the hypothalamus, compared to all the previous regions, we see dramatically less plaque accumulation. There's a small amount in the transgenic mice. However, that number, like I said, is very, very low. Moving on to the microglia, there seems to be an overall low amount of microglia, although there might be a slight increase when you compare the wild type to the transgenic mice. When looking at the astrocyte count, there seem to be relatively low abundance. There could be some slight differences between groups. However, it seems as though within all of the groups, there's very little variability. And then finally, looking at the amount of infiltrating T cells in the region, there seem to be a little bit higher number of T cell counts in the Western diet transgenic mice group. However, there is a lot of variability within that group, so we're not certain if that is a standout feature of wild-type transgenic mice or if it's just an anomaly in this one figure. And then finally, moving on to figure 11. Again, we're going to be looking at the exact same metrics as previously mentioned, but we're looking in a new brain region called the choroid plexus. And a really interesting point on this that I'll bring up in a moment is that this region is very roughly considered the main entry point for both T cells and B cells from the body into the brain. Or I should say, from the body into the brain through the blood-brain barrier. When looking at the plaque abundance in any group, whether it be wild type or transgenic mice, we count absolutely no plaques in this brain region. And there seem to be a similar microglia count in all groups when comparing both the wild type, the Western diet, the APPS1, or the normal diet mice. All groups seem to have very similar microglia count. Moving on to the astrocytes, we see a very similar trend. There seem to be some astrocytes in some groups. However, there's very little variability from one group to the next. And then finally, looking at the mean amount of T cell infiltrating T cells in the choroid plexus, we see very little variability. However, there seems to be slightly more infiltrating T cells in both groups of the transgenic mice than in both groups of the wild-type mice. And the researchers actually propose a really interesting theory to this and to the whole paper, and so I'll just read their quote to you. Their quote is, "The Western diet might act as an additive factor for blood-brain barrier permeability in the amyloid-prone animals by disrupting the metabolic imbalance." And so what they're implying here is that here in this, what I'll call the highway of the brain, or this region that serves as a barrier for both B and T cells, there seem to be a few more T cells there whenever the mice are on a Western diet. And so what they are hinting at is there could be some sort of mechanism that when the organism or when the mouse is on a Western diet, that actually increases the permeability, allowing for more T cells to actually infiltrate into the brain through the choroid plexus. And so that concludes the paper. But before Happy takes it over and shares his general thoughts, I'm going to go over a couple one limitation and one strength that the authors mentioned that I thought were really cool to bring up. The first limitation, or the only limitation that I'm going to talk about that they bring up, is that they note that the inflammation tracer imaging that was previously mentioned is really quite challenging. And although I don't have personal experience with it, I believe that is likely the case. When you're injecting radio-labeled tracers into an organism, a lot of things have to go correctly to get a really strong reading. And these technologies have been rapidly developed in the recent years. However, there still remains room for development and room for higher and higher precision. And so they note this as a potential limitation for their study. On the other hand, a strength of this study in particular is that their model does not include age-related effects on the brain, or what they call the inflamma-aging process. And the reason is because these mice are relatively young. All of these mice, whenever they're sacked, are roughly from 10 to potentially on the higher side 12 months old. And so these mice are very young, and they're not undergoing inflammation that is associated with aging or other sorts of processes like that. And so here they are specifically looking at the impact of diet and the impact of APPS1 knock-in on these mice, and they don't have other conflicting variables that are associated with the age. So now that I've shared these last figures and one limitation and one strength, Happy's going to take it away and close us out to talk about some general thoughts he had on the paper, as well as some potential larger ideas that are associated with the paper.
Thank you so much for that analysis, Stedman. Last week, I mentioned why I find this paper very interesting. It's because they use both genetic factors and environmental factors to study Alzheimer's. I mentioned this in this journal club before. Most of the mouse models that we have to study Alzheimer's are very limited. The way they work is we overexpress mutant versions of human proteins in mice so that they can produce those proteins and have those amyloid deposits so that we can study them in a very short period of time. But there's a trade-off that comes with that, because that's not how Alzheimer's develops in humans. It's a disease of aging. It comes with advancing age. And at the same time, there's also environmental components like diet that play a factor in the progression and development of Alzheimer's disease. But this paper uses both the genetic factors, which is the amyloid precursor protein and the presenilin proteins, as genetic variables to study Alzheimer's, but adds an environmental, a lifestyle factor to it, which is diet. And I really love that about the paper. As I was reading this paper, two big questions came to mind. The one big question here is, does the inflammatory response in the periphery of the body, which is outside of the brain, cause the neuroinflammation in the brain? This is one big question that the immune hypothesis for Alzheimer's disease needs to answer. I think there's got to be some really good data to back peripheral inflammation with neuroinflammation in the brain. And the second question that I had that it came to my mind is, what is the role of T cell infiltration in the progression of neurodegenerative diseases? We know that these adaptive immune cells are entering the brain, and they enter the brain more when there is neurodegeneration, but we still don't know what the role of that infiltration is. Is it to help the body, or do they end up causing more damage to the brain because of their cytotoxic and immune nature? Those are both mechanistic questions for the immune hypothesis of Alzheimer's disease. That is it for today. Make sure to listen to the first part from last week as it gives the introduction and the setup of the study. As always, I'll add the PubMed link to the paper under the episode notes. I'll also add the link to the webpage of the primary investigators that were on this paper so that you can check out more of their work. Stedman, I want to say thank you for joining me on this journal club, and I hope you can come in future episodes.
I'm excited to do so. This was really a treat to get to sit down and look at a field that I don't have personal experience with. Being able to dive into a new paper and a new field is really exciting things, especially whenever you have help of colleagues like yourself to help me understand all these new ideas.
Thank you so much. Next week, we'll look at the last paper for this series on Alzheimer's disease. Until then, ciao, ciao.